A Bird on the Wing, Talks on Zen, Discourse Number 8, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Zen Master Hunan had only one successor. His name was Shouju. After Shouju had completed his study of Zen, Hunan called him into his room and said, "I am getting old, and as far as I know, you are the only one that will carry on this teaching. Here is a book. It has been passed down from master to master for 7 generations, and I have also added many points according to my understanding. The book is very precious, and I am giving it to you to represent your successorship." Shouju replied, "Please keep the book. I received your Zen without writing, and I am very happy with it. I know that," replied Hunan, "but this great work has been carried down from master to master for 7 generations, and it will be a symbol of your learning. Here, take the book." The two were talking in front of the fire, and the instant Shouju felt the book in his hands, he thrust it into the flames. Hunan, who had never before in his life been angry, shouted, "What are you doing?" And Shouju shouted back, "What are you saying?"
All books are dead, and that is how it should be. They cannot be alive. All scriptures are graveyards, and they cannot be nothing else. The word, the moment it is uttered, goes wrong. Unuttered, it is okay. Uttered, it is falsified. By the very utterance, truth cannot be said, cannot be written, cannot be indicated in any way. If it can be said, then you will attain to truth just by hearing it. If it can be written, you will attain to truth just by reading it. If it can be indicated, then you will attain to truth just by mere indication. This is not possible. There is no way to transfer truth to you. There exists no bridge. It cannot be given. It cannot be communicated. But people become addicted with scriptures, books, words, theories. For the mind, it is easy to understand a theory. It is easy to read a book. It is easy to carry the tradition. Because with anything dead, mind is always the master. With anything alive, mind becomes the slave. So mind is always afraid of life. It is the dead part in you. Just as I said that hairs, nails are dead part of your body, the part that has died already, and the body is throwing it out. Mind is the dead part of your consciousness. The thing that has already become dead, and the consciousness wants to get rid of it. What is mind? The past, the memory, the accumulated experience. But the moment you have experienced the thing, it is dead. experiencing is in the present. Experience is in the past. While you are listening to me, just in the moment, just here and now, it is an experiencing. It is a live process. But the moment you say, I have heard, it has become dead. It has become an experience. While listening to me, the mind is not there. You are there. The moment mind comes in, the mind says, I have understood. I have heard. I know. What do you mean? The mind has taken possession. The world can be possessed by the mind. Anything dead can be possessed by the mind. And only dead things can be possessed. If you try to possess a live thing, there are only two ways. One, either you will not be able to possess it, or you will have to kill it first. And then you can possess it. So wherever there is possession, there is murdering, killing. If you love a person, love in itself is an experiencing, a moment-to-moment flow, with no past being carried. The river remains fresh. But the mind says, possess this woman, possess this man. Because who knows about the future? Possess. She may escape, she may go to somebody else, she may fall in love with someone else. Possess her and block all the ways of escape. Close all the doors. So she remains always yours. Mind has entered. Now this woman will be killed. Now this man will be murdered. There will be a husband, there will be a wife, but there will not be two live persons. And this is the mischief mind goes on doing everywhere. The moment you say, I love, it has become an experience. It is already dead. Loving is something else. It is a process. While in love, you cannot say, I love. That will be profane. How can you say, I love? Because in love you are not, the possessor is not. So how can you say, I love? In love there is no I. Love is there, of course, but you are not. While an experience is alive, experiencing, there is no ego. The process is there. You can say love is there, but you cannot say, I love. In that love you have dissolved. You are merged, melted. Love is greater than you. Anything live, alive is greater than you. Dead, the mind can jump, just like a cat jumps on a mouse, catches hold of it. Truth cannot be delivered. There is no way to deliver it. Once delivered, it is dead. It has already become untrue. Laws say, insisted not to say anything about the truth his whole life. Whenever someone will ask about truth, he will talk many things, but he will not say anything about the truth. He will avoid. In the end, he was forced, disciples, lovers, forced on him that you should write, because you have known something, which is rarely known. You have become something which is unique. There will be no Lao Tse again. So he wrote a small book, Tao Te King. But the first thing he said in it is, Tao cannot be said, truth cannot be uttered, and the moment you utter it, it is already false. And then he says, now I can write at ease. I have declared the basic fact. Uttered, truth becomes false. Written, it has already gone wrong. Now I can write at ease. Why the word is false? One thing, it always belongs to the past. Another thing, word in itself cannot carry the experience to you. I say, I am silent. You hear the words. The word silence is heard. But what do you understand? If you have never been silent, if you have never tasted of it, if it has never stirred your heart, if it has never overwhelmed you, overpowered you, how can you understand? And if it has overpowered you, if there has been a gap when you disappeared and silence was there, there will be no need for me to talk about silence. The moment you see me, you will know. The moment you come near me, you will feel. The word will not be needed. The word is needed because you don't know. This is the problem. Because you don't know, the word is needed. So how the word can express that which you don't know, the word cannot say to you. The word will be heard. You may memorize it. You may understand the meaning which is written in the dictionary. But that is not the meaning. What silence means is written in the dictionary and you know already. But when I say I am silent, the silence that I am here is not written in the dictionary, cannot be written there. If you are silent, you will understand, but then there is no need to say. If you are not silent, whatsoever you understand will be wrong. But then there is need to say. I have heard once a villager entered in a big bank. Many people were coming in and going, and much business was on. Suddenly the villager cried, shouted at the top of his voice, and he said, did somebody drop a wad of notes with a rubber band around it? Many people cried, yes, I did. And many people ran towards him. Not one, many. A crowd gathered and everybody was claiming. The villager says, well, I have only found the rubber band. Whenever I say truth, whenever I say silence, you will only find the rubber band. The notes will be missing. The word will reach to you, but not with the weight of notes. Those notes will be left behind. They are in my heart. The word will reach. It is just a rubber band. It may have been around the notes, but still it is just a rubber band. Truth is incommunicable. But then what masters have been doing? They seem to be involved in an absurd activity. Yes, that's right. They are trying to say something which cannot be said. And they are indicating something which cannot be indicated. And they are trying to communicate something which has never been communicated and will never be communicated. Then what they are doing, their whole effort is absurd. But still, there is something in their effort, their compassion. Knowing well that I cannot say that which I want to say. The easiest course is I should remain silent. Because if I know it cannot be said, then why bother? You cannot understand the word, but will you be able to understand my silence? So it is a choice between two evils. It is better I should remain silent, that will be more consistent. It cannot be said I should remain silent, but will you be able to understand silence? The word you may not be able to understand, but you can hear it. Some possibilities open. Hearing it continuously, you may become aware of something which has not been said in the word. Listening to me, by and by, you may become aware of me, not of what I am saying. The word will help just as a bait. You may be caught in the net. But if I am silent, you will pass by my side, you will not even become aware that I am there. Even the possibility is lost. So when masters speak, they don't speak to tell the truth that cannot be told. They have a choice, either they can remain silent or they can talk. With silence, you will miss them completely. With word, a possibility opens, not a certainty, because everything depends on you. But a possibility opens. Listening continuously to a Buddha, someday you may become silent. Because just being near a Buddha is being near a pool of silence, an energy, a tremendous energy which has become silent. This is what Indians have been saying, calling satsang, to be near the truth. It is not a question of communication, just to be near the truth. It can become infectious. Just as you reach near a river, the breeze becomes cooler. You may not see the river. The river may be still far away, but the breeze carries the message. You feel a coolness coming. When you reach near a Buddha, the words are carrying only just a coolness that Buddha is somewhere near. You may start groping for him. You may be lost in his words, then you are lost in the forest and the river is missed. But if you are alert, intelligent, then by and by you will feel from where this wind is blowing, from where these words are coming. And these words carry a silence around them. It may be just a rubber band, but that rubber band has been in deep contact with the notes. It carries something. Something of the source. From where this breeze is coming, if you can follow intelligently, sooner or later you will reach to the source. The words of a Buddha may not be able to communicate the truth, but they can communicate the music that exists in one who is enlightened. They carry the melody, something of the source, a tiny part of it, a very tiny part of it, but something of the source. It should be so, because when a word comes out of Buddha, it carries something of the Buddha. It has to be so. It has been vibrating in his being. The word has been in touch with Buddha's heartbeat. The word has passed through Buddha's silence. It has been in the womb of Buddha. It carries the scent, the fragrance, a very far-off cry, but still, you may be lost in the words, then you missed Buddha. But if you are aware that the word cannot carry the truth, then you will always put aside the word and follow the perfume. Put aside the word and follow the music. Put aside the word and follow the presence. If I suddenly say, hey, you look at me. The word is meaningless, but the look. Suddenly you become aware of me. That awareness has to be followed. Then, words may not tell the truth, but they can become a help, a step towards the truth. This story is beautiful. A master is on his dying bed. Soon he has to leave this earth and this vehicle, this body. And he would like to have a successor, one who can carry the flame that he has kindled, one who will be able to continue the work that he has started. He chooses a disciple. He calls him near and he says to him that you are the most capable of those who are around me, and you are going to be my successor. You will have to continue this work. For 7 generations, a book has been passed from one master to another disciple who was going to be the successor. I received this book from my master, and I give you this book to you. This is very precious, a unique treasury. 7 enlightened persons have noted down their experience of truth in it, and I have also added few of my own understandings in it. Preserve it. Don't lose it. Don't it be lost. The disciple said, but I have achieved the experience without any book, and I am happy and blissful. And I am not a little bit dissatisfied. So why add this burden to me? Why give an unnecessary responsibility to me? I have already experienced the truth and the book was not needed, so it is unnecessary. The master still insisted and he said that much valuable is written in it. It is no ordinary book. It is the book, the Bible. The Bible means the book. And 7 generations of enlightened people. So don't be sacrilegious. Pay respect to this book and keep it and hand over it to your successor. By giving this book to you, I certify this book is just a representation that you are my successor. The master gave the book to the disciple. It must have been a cold night. The fire was burning. From one hand the disciple received the book and in the same instant he thrust it into the fire. The master shouted, who has never been angry in his life, "What are you doing?" And the disciple shouted even louder than the master, that, "What are you saying?" This is beautiful. The master must have died peacefully. This was the right man. The book had to be thrust into fire. This disciple would have missed. If he had kept the book, he would have missed. Then he was not the successor. Because you can keep the book only when the thing has not happened to you. Otherwise, who is bothered about the words when the truth is with you? Who is bothered about a book when the real thing has happened within? When the experience is there, then who is bothered about explanations? Explanations are precious because the experience is lacking. Theories are significant because there is no knowledge. When you know, you can throw theories. They are rubber bands. When the notes are with you, you can throw the rubber band. Preserving a rubber band shows the foolishness. This book was not precious. No book is precious. And the master was playing a game. And the same must have been the game his master would have played with. Nobody knows what was written in the book, but I tell you, nothing was written in it. It was empty. Had the disciple preserved it, and the master died, and then he would have opened it, and then he would have cried. Nothing was written in it. It was just a game, an old game. Every master has been trying to test the experience of the disciple, whether he has known. If he has known, he will not be addicted to the book. Why? There is no point in it. That's why he said, What are you saying? To preserve the book. When I have achieved without the book, when I have already achieved, what are you saying? The master provoked the situation. And in that situation, the disciple proved his matter. He proved that he knows. Even a slight inclination to preserve, and he would have missed. He was not the successor. He even didn't look in the book what is there. He was not even curious, because only ignorance is curious. If you know, you know. What is the curiosity? What would have happened to you? The first thing the mind will say, at least look in it, what is there? But that gesture would have been enough to prove that this man has not achieved. Curiosity means ignorance. Wisdom is not curious. Curiosity asks questions. Wisdom has no questions to ask. What you would have done? The first thing that comes to the mind, at least see what is there. If the master insists this precious has to be preserved, handed over from one generation to another, and seven enlightened persons have written it, and my own master has aided his own understanding in it, at least have a look before you throw it in the fire. But I tell you, if he had looked, he would have been thrown out of the house with the book. Get out and never come back again. He acted out of a deep understanding. How the master who knows can insist that the book can be precious? There must be some game. The master has never been angry, never in his life. And suddenly he was angry and said, what are you doing? He created the whole situation. In this anger, the disciple may have yielded, may have said, I have done something wrong, forgive me. The mind may have come and thought that I have done something wrong. The master may not appoint me a successor now. That's how the mind functions. If the master is so angry, it means I have done something wrong. And I may miss the successorhood. And I was going to be the chief, I was going to be the master of the monastery. And millions would have followed me, and thousands would have been my disciples. And I have done something wrong. A man who has never been angry is angry, shouting. If you were there, you would have touched the feet of the master and said, forgive me, but appoint me. The disciple said, and what are you saying? If the master can play anger, the disciple can also play. But this can happen only when both know. He answered in the right coin. He answered rightly. The master was satisfied. This is the man. He became the successor. He was the successor. But this has been done by every religion. They have been preserving books and doing nothing else. Christians preserve their Bible. Mohammedans preserve their Quran. Hindus preserve their Gita, and they have missed. They are not the successors. Mohammedans does not belong to Muhammad. Cannot belong. The Quran must have been in fire if they belonged. Christians don't know anything about Christ because they preserve Bible. And Hindus have no understanding of Krishna. because of this Gita. They go on carrying the burden. All the Vedas and all the Bibles and all the Qurans are for those who don't understand. They carry the burden, and the burden becomes so much, they are crushed under it. They are not free through it, they become slaves through it. A religious person is always beyond the book. A religious consciousness is never addicted with the words and the verbal. The whole thing is childish. A religious man is in search of authentic experience, not borrowed words, not experiences of others. Because unless I know Buddhas may have existed, they are useless. Unless I know, there is no truth. Because truth can only be my experience, only then it is there. The whole world may say that there is light and there is a rainbow in the sky and the sun is rising. But if my eyes are closed, what does it mean to me? The rainbow, the colors, the sunrise. The whole thing is non-existential to me. My eyes are closed. I am blind. And if I listen to them too much, and if I start believing in them too much, and if I borrow their words, and I also start talking about the rainbow that I have not seen, about colors which I cannot see, about the sunrise which is not my experience, I may be lost in the forest of words. It is better to say that I am blind and I don't know any colors and I don't know any light. Unless my eyes open, there is no sun and there can be no sunrise. Insist so that you can work upon your eyes. Don't carry the books. They talk about rainbows seen by others. They talk about sunrises experienced by others. Don't carry the borrowed God when you can encounter him directly, immediately. Why create barriers of books between you and him? Burn the books. That is the message. Throw them in the fire. That doesn't mean that go and throw your Gita in the fire. That will not be of much help. Because if a Gita cannot help towards truth, how burning a Gita can be helpful? No, that is not the point. You can throw all the books and you can remain addicted to theories, doctrines. When I say burn the books, I say burn the mind, drop the mind. Don't be verbal. Seek authentic experience. But your inquiry may have arisen out of the books, that's the problem. Your questions may have arisen out of books. If your questioning is itself bookish, your whole inquiry has started in a wrong direction. People come to me and they ask, what is God? And I ask them whether this question has come out of your own life or you have read some book which talks about God and you have become curious. If your curiosity is arisen out of learning, it is useless. It is not your question. And if the question is not yours, no answer can be of any help. When the basic thing is borrowed, even the question is borrowed, you will go on borrowing the answers. Seek your authentic question. What is your question? I have heard about a philosopher who entered in a London car showroom. He looked around. Then he became fascinated with a beautiful car, a streamlined sports car. The salesman became alert. He was looking so much interested. The salesman came near and he asked, "Are you interested in this car?" The man said, "Yes, I'm interested. Is it fast?" The salesman says, "Fast? You cannot find more faster a car than this. You enter in it right now, and by tomorrow morning at 3 o'clock you will be in Aberdeen. Are you really interested to buy it?" The philosopher said, "I will think about it." Next day he came and said, "No, I don't want to purchase that car. The whole night I couldn't sleep. I remained awake, thinking and thinking and thinking. And I could not find a reason why I should like to be in Aberdeen at 3 o'clock in the morning." Whenever you read a book, ask, inquire for what reason you would like to be in Aberdeen at 3 o'clock in the morning. You read a book, you read something about God, you read something about moksha, you read something about the soul, you read something about bliss, you become fascinated. And words of those who know are really fascinating. You forget completely for what reason you would like to encounter God. Just by reading a man, just by reading a book, if you read Jesus, you will be fascinated. Because this man is drunk with God. His every word is alcoholic. If you hear him, you will feel drunk. But close Bible, escape from this Jesus, brood. Whether this is your inquiry or this man has sealed his inquiry, sold his inquiry to you. Another's inquiry, then your whole search goes false. The first thing to remember is your question must be yours. And then second thing is to remember the answer must be yours. Books supply both. That's why I say burn the books and be authentic. Come out of the jungle of words and feel what you want, what's your desire, and follow it wheresoever it leads. sooner or later you will come to the divine. It may take a little longer time, but then the search will be real. And this disciple says to the master, I could achieve without the book, so why? Why you are forcing this book on me? He did well. He threw it in the fire. If all the religious books are burnt, the world will be more religious. There are so many books and ready-made answers that everybody knows the question, the answer. It has become a game. It is not your life. The world should be freed of books, should be freed of all ideals, should be freed of all borrowed inquiries. Every man should start feeling his own heartbeat, his own pulse, where it leads, what it desires. What is my question? If you can find your question, the answer is waiting just nearby. It may be that finding the question, you have already found the answer. Because the answer lies in authenticity. If the question is authentic, 50% problem is already solved. You have become authentic in questioning. Just a little more effort, going a little deeper, and the question always hides the answer behind it. Question is just one aspect of the coin, the other aspect is the answer. Just behind questioning, the answer is lying, waiting for you. But if you have not come to your question, how can you come to your answer? And only the answer that is yours will free you, will make you free. Jesus says, truth liberates. Yes, truth liberates, but never borrowed. Jesus' truth will not liberate you. But Christians have been believing that Jesus' truth should liberate them. Not only that, they think that just by Jesus' crucifixion, humanity is already liberated. This is being blind, absolutely blind. Nothing is liberated. Nobody is liberated. Salvation has not happened. Jesus is crucified, that's okay. But through Jesus' crucifixion, Jesus is liberated, not you. The whole thing seems to be a trick. Jesus dies on the cross and humanity, particularly Christianity, is liberated. One who is a Christian is already liberated. This is how mind thinks. Goes on throwing responsibility on somebody else. If you are a sinner, you are sinner because Adam sinned and was thrown out of the heaven. And now you are liberated because Jesus has entered again in the kingdom of God. So Adam and Jesus are the authentic persons. You are just shadows. Adam sins, you have become a sinner. So who you are? You are a shadow. Adam is thrown out of heaven and you are thrown. This can happen only to a shadow, not to a real person. If I am thrown out of this house, only my shadow will be thrown with me, nothing else. And if I enter in the kingdom of God, only my shadow will enter with me. You cannot enter. Jesus solved everything. He entered in the kingdom of God. and whole humanity entered with him. Nobody has entered. Nobody can enter in such an easy way. You have to pay the cost. You have to carry your own cross. You have to be crucified through suffering. Your suffering, remember, not Jesus' suffering or anybody else, will open the doors. Otherwise, they are closed. And you cannot enter just following Jesus. Nobody can enter that way. The door opens for the individual, because individual is the authentic reality. This disciple said, I have already entered, Master. So why you are giving this map to me? A map is needed for one who is lost. But I have reached the goal. So why this map? And the Master says, the map is very precious. All the paths are indicated on it. If the disciple has hesitated for a single moment, the Master's penetrating eyes were searching in his heart. Whether he hesitates, whether he says, okay, maybe the Master is right, and the map is precious. But what a man need a map for when he has reached the goal? And he threw the book in the fire, he threw the map. Average. One man driving his car on a lonely road suspected that he has missed the path, suspected that he is moving in some wrong direction. He saw a beggar walking. He stopped his car and asked the beggar. Does this road lead to Delhi? The beggar said, I don't know. So the man asked, does this road lead to Agra? The beggar said, I don't know. The driver was already irritated. He became more irritated. So he said to the beggar in anger, so you don't know much? The beggar laughed and said, but I am not lost. So the question is not of knowledge. It is a question whether you are lost or not. The beggar said, but I am not lost. Whether I know or not, that's not the point. When you are lost, a map is needed. Knowledge is needed. Book is needed. When you are not lost, what is the point of carrying a book, a map? And an enlightened person is at the goal everywhere. Wherever he is the goal. Once you become aware, you are the goal. You cannot be lost then. The beggar is not lost. Why? Because he is not going to Delhi. He is not going to Agra. He is not going anywhere. Wherever he reaches, that is the goal. He is not lost because he is not moving in a direction. He is not lost because there is no desired goal. This disciple throws the map because there is no goal. He is the goal now, wherever he is. He is at peace, at home. There is no desire and no motivation. The future has disappeared. This moment is enough. Throw all the maps. Because you are the goal. Maps can help if the goal is somewhere else. Maps cannot help if you are the goal. They may even distract you, because when you look at a map, you cannot look at yourself. Books cannot help, because you are the truth. And there is no book where you are written. That book is you, no other book. Here you are written in this book which you are. You have to be deciphered. And if you are wrong, all books that you carry will go wrong. And all maps you carry will go wrong and will indicate wrongly. Because who will read those books? And who will follow the instructions indicated in the map? I have heard one man is driving and his wife is looking at the map. Suddenly the wife cried in panic and said, "We are lost because this map is upside down." Map is upside down. We are lost. The map can be put right side up. No map is upside down by itself. But this wife must have been upside down. If you are upside down, all the books you will read will go upside down. If you are disturbed, you will be reflected in your Quran, in your Bible, in your Gita. If you are mad, your interpretations of Veda will be mad. If you are afraid, then you will read fear wherever you go, whatsoever you do. Your doing will come out of you, your interpretation will come out of you, and you are wrong. So a master is not interested in giving you a right book. There are none. No right books exist. Only right people and wrong people. Right persons and wrong persons. So a real master is interested in putting you right side up. A master is interested in changing you, the person. Not interested in giving you a book. That's why the disciples said, "What are you saying? Such a nonsense things you have never said. You have gone mad. That keep, preserve the book, it is precious." No book is precious. Only the person is precious. But when you don't know your value, you think the book is precious. When you don't know the precious value of your being, then every type of theory becomes valuable. Words are valuable because you have not known the value of the being. Anything more, Kit?
There will be a precious value in the book that comes out of this series of talks, because it can tell people that there is a Buddha available now, and that he has methods that are suitable to the time and to us. But one of the questions that has arisen here and will certainly arise in the West is, how do I know a master? How do I know I need a master? Does a master come to me, or do I go to him?
Yes, this book is going to be very precious. Keep, preserve it. Seven generations of masters have given it to me, and I give it to you. Now it depends what you do. I have added my understandings to it. As far as I am concerned, I am giving you this book just to throw in the fire. The day you can throw it in the fire will be the day you have understood it. If you go on preserving it, you missed. But the book is needed, because then if it is not there, what you will throw in the fire? It is needed. Try to preserve it. It is very precious. But when you will understand, you will throw it in the fire. So I am not saying only give Quran to the fire, give my books also to the fire. Because they can be more dangerous than Quran and Gita and Bible. Because they have become out of date in a sense. You are very, very far away from Muhammad. Even more far away from Krishna. Their voice has become a very, very distant, dim thing. My voice is needed to you. It is immediate. It is direct. It may become a greater prison for you. It is more alive right now. It can capture you. It can become more a burden. If a living master can free you, a living master can become more a prison also. It depends. There are directions in it. It is a map. A map into the world of consciousness. A map how to get roots into the earth. A map how to get wings into the sky. But these trees don't need it. If I tell them how to get roots into the earth, they will say, don't disturb. We have already got roots into the earth. If I say to them how to get wings in the sky, they will say, don't disturb the silence. We are already standing in the sky, spreading in the sky. And if I tell them, preserve this book, they will laugh. And if they can find a fire, they will throw the book in the fire. So, what I am saying? I am saying to you, to get roots and throw the maps. To get wings and throw the maps. Don't be fixed with what I say. Don't get obsessed with what I say. Put the words aside and look at me. And that is what I hope one day you will be able to say to me, that if I say, preserve this book, you will be able to shout at me and say, what are you saying? Have you gone mad? But you can say that without reaching the point where it becomes meaningful. But you cannot deceive me. You can throw the book in the fire without throwing the attachment into the fire. Then you are imitating. Imitation won't help. Now Buddhas have existed on the earth. Their disciples have existed. Everything has happened whatsoever can happen. And everything is written. You can decide. You can imitate. But imitation won't help. It happened once. A man came to a Zen master. He has read all the scriptures, memorized them. And he has become a great philosopher, because he was very efficient in using words, logic, And this Zen master was just a villager, just like that beggar who said, I am not last, but with no maps, with no books. He has never read the Lotus Sutra, one of the greatest Buddhist scriptures, worth preserving, always keeping near. Just like as there are bedside books, Lotus Sutra is a heartside book. It is concerned with the heart. Lotus is the symbol for the heart. Fully bloom, in full bloom, the heart. So Buddhists think there is nothing comparable to Lotus Sutra. This man has memorized the whole Lotus Sutra. He could repeat it from anywhere. You ask any question and immediately he will answer. He was like a computer. Very efficient. So he asked the Zen master, have you read Lotus Sutra? The Zen master said, Lotus Sutra? Never heard of it. The man, the pandit, the scholar said, never heard of it? And people think you have become enlightened? The Zen master said, people must be wrong. I am an ignorant man. How I can be enlightened? The scholar was at ease now. So he said, now I will repeat the Lotus Sutra. Can you read? The man said, I can't read. So he said, okay. Then listen to me. And I will explain anything you want to ask. He had come to seek a master. He became a master. The ego never wants to be a disciple. It is always in search of being a master. All the Buddhas must have laughed at the situation. The master became the disciple and the disciple became the master and said, listen. The master started listening. He said, okay. He repeated the Lotus Sutra. In the Lotus Sutra it is said everything is emptiness. This world is empty. Hell is empty. Heaven is empty. God is empty. Everything is emptiness. Emptiness is the nature of all things. Nothingness. So be attuned to nothingness and you will achieve. Suddenly the master jumped and hit this pandit on the head. The pandit became mad. He started shouting and he said, not only that you are not enlightened, not only that you are ignorant, you seem to be neurotic. What you are doing? The master sat again and he said, if everything is nothingness, from where this anger comes? The world is emptiness. Heaven is emptiness. Hell is emptiness. The nature of things is nothingness, from where this anger comes? The pandit was puzzled. He said, it is not written in the Lotus Sutra. You asked foolish questions. It is not written in the Lotus Sutra. The whole Lotus Sutra I have memorized. And this is no way of asking a question. Hitting me. This is no way of asking a question, but this is the only way. Theories are of not much help. You can say everything is nothingness and just a little hit and anger arises out of nothingness. A woman passes and sex arises out of nothingness. You look at a beautiful house and to desire to possess arises out of nothingness. When Buddha said everything is nothingness, he was saying that if you can understand this, nothing will arise. Because how anything can arise out of nothingness? So nothingness is a meditation, not a theory. It is falling into the abyss. Then anger cannot arise, sex cannot arise. How they can arise? There are two types of persons. One, who are in search of theories. Please don't be that type. That is the most stupid type, in search of theories. The other type is the wise type, in search of experience, not of theories. This book, whatsoever I am saying, can become a theory for you. Then you missed. It can become a thirst, a hunger, a deep urge to experience. You got the point. But don't be addicted with the words. Don't carry the container. Remember the content. And when that disciple threw the book in the fire, he was throwing the container. Content was preserved in his heart. And the master was happy that this man has understood. The container has to be thrown and the content preserved. Whatsoever I say, throw it in the fire, but whatsoever happens to you in my presence, that is the content. Preserve it. That is precious. But there is no need to preserve it. If it happens, you will preserve it. If you know it is preserved, and there is no way to throw it in the fire, only books can be thrown, truths cannot be thrown in the fire. That's why the disciples shouted, "What are you saying? Can a precious thing be thrown in the fire? And can a precious thing be burnt in the fire? And if the fire can burn your book, what type of preciousness it is? What type of truth is this? If the fire can burn the truth, it is not worth preserving. That which cannot be burnt, that which cannot be dead, even through fire it will come more alive, more pure. That is the truth. That's why I said throw the Bible in the fire. Not that I am against the Bible, against the containers. The content cannot be thrown. The container is the Lotus Sutra. The content is in your lotus, that is your heart. Anything more?
A lot of people have mentioned that they haven't been able to feel they can really let themselves go in meditation because of the physical pain, bumping into each other and falling down, and that there's some sort of excuse or block for really letting go. Could you talk to us about physical aspect
of ourselves and physical pain? A child can fall, but he will not feel hurt. A drunkard walking on the street falls, but his body is preserved. His bones are not fractured. What is happening? The real thing is not the other bumping in you. The real thing is your resistance. you are afraid the other may bump in you. You are resisting the whole time. Somebody may not bump in you. You are afraid. Fear closes you. You become stiff. And if then somebody bumps in you, that stiffness is hurt. Not you. But you feel that you are hurt. And then your mind says you were right to be afraid from the very beginning. And it was good to be alert that nobody bumps in you. So mind is a vicious circle. It gives you an idea, and because of that idea certain things happen. Then that idea becomes more fixed. Then you are more afraid. Then you are constantly in fear. How you will do meditation? In Japan, they have a science of wrestling. They call judo or jiu-jitsu. And the whole science consists of a very meditative thing. The judo wrestler learns how not to resist. When somebody attacks you, you have to absorb his energy, not resist, as if he is giving energy to you. Absorb his energy. Don't resist. He is not the enemy, he is the friend coming to you. And when he hits you by his hand or his fist, much energy is released from his fist. Soon he will be exhausted. Absorb the energy that is released from his fist. When he is exhausted, just by absorbing his energy, you will feel more strong, stronger than ever. But you resist, you shrink, you become stiff, so that you may not be hurt. Then his energy and your energy clash. In that clash, pain happens. It is you. In meditation, remember this. If somebody bumps in you, absorb his energy. And now, a meditative person bumping in you, you are lucky. He is releasing beautiful energy. A meditative energy coming out of him. Absorb it. Feel happy. Feel thankful and start jumping again. Don't be stiff. Don't resist. He was sharing his energy to you unknowingly. Share it. Soon you will come to know a different quality, that is non-resistance. The whole body and mind behaves in a different way then. You know a secret. You fall on the ground suddenly. Fall. As if the ground, the earth is your mother. Make it a rest, not a class. Fall down, but don't be stiff. If you are stiff, you may get a fracture. The fracture will come because you were stiff and there was a fight between you and the earth. Earth is, of course, greater than you. You will be a loser. Fall down just like a drunkard. You see them falling every day on the street. By the morning they are back, completely okay. Every night they fall down. And never their bones are fractured. These drunkards know a certain secret you don't know. What they know? They fall without any consciousness on their part. Without any ego there, they fall. There is nobody to fight with the earth. The earth absorbs them. They absorb the earth. Be a drunkard. Fall without the ego. Enjoy the fall. Feel friendly and intimate with the earth. Soon you will be back on your feet with more energy than ever. And once you know the neck, there will be no disturbance. You are hurt because you are in a fight, continuous fight. You are hurt because you are always resisting. Consciously, unconsciously, you are always ready to resist. And when so many persons are doing meditation, you become afraid. Somebody may hit you. But if this fear is there, how you will meditate? Rather than being in fear, be in love. So many persons meditating, so much divine energy is released. This is a celebration. Why be in fear? Be in love. Enjoy this group consciousness. So many persons dancing, become part. Lose your ego. Be one with this collective force and energy. It will be difficult in the beginning. It is because many lives fixed attitude of resistance. But someday you will become aware. Someday a gap will be created and you will see. And one experience will do. If you someday fall on the earth and there is no hurt, and you feel beautiful, you have come to know a secret. You have stumbled upon the key. Now this key can be used on many locks. It is a master key. Whenever someone comes to fight with you, absorb him. When someone insults you, absorb him and see, his insult becomes a flower. He is releasing energy because when someone insults you, he is throwing energy. He is foolish, he is stupid. You absorb his energy. Thank him and go back and see what happens. When someone is ready to fight, you simply allow him to hit you. Be as if you are not there and he is fighting in emptiness, and allow him. Don't resist. Once you come to know, and there is no other way, just by saying by me will not do. It is an art, it is not a science. Science can be explained. Art has to be experienced. It is just like swimming. If you say to a non-swimmer that there is nothing to it, you just take a jump, start throwing your hands, he will say, what are you saying? This will be a suicide. How can you explain to a non-swimmer that swimming is beautiful, the most beautiful experience of any that the body can give to you? Such a flowing experience, such oneness with the river. The whole body, every fiber of it, every cell alive. The water is life, because all life arises out of water. Water is vital. In your body, you are 85% water. So 85% water, liquid, meeting with a big river or the ocean. You have come to the original source of vitality. But you cannot explain to anyone who is a non-swimmer. It is not a science. You have to take him by and by. In the beginning, shallow water. So he becomes confident. Then by and by, towards deeper. In the beginning he will be awkward. He will be afraid. He will be fighting with the river. Afraid. that the river may drown. He will feel the river antagonistic in the beginning. Soon he will realize the river is not antagonistic. The river also enjoys you there swimming. The river feels happy. One of his part has come back. It is a celebrating moment for the river. A river where no one swims is sad. Where many people dance and swim in the river and enjoy, the river is happy. Soon you will feel the river helps you. You are unnecessary fighting. By and by, you will drop your movements, activity. And when the swimmer becomes perfect, he simply floats on the river. No activity is needed. The river does everything. He simply floats on the river. In old yoga traditions, there is a particular meditation just to float on the river and feel one with it. But don't make any movement. Don't move the body. Let the river do the work. And if the river is doing the work, you are simply floating, non-doing. You will have a feeling of the whole existence. This is how existence is floating. You are unnecessary fighting. In meditation, you are entering a river of consciousness. So many people around you create a tremendous force, a stream. Enter into it like a swimmer, not fighting, floating, and see what happens. And it is an art. I cannot tell you. I can just indicate. You have to experience, and you have to wait until the experience happens to you. A single moment of experience, that nobody is against you, nobody is going to harm you. This whole existence is homely. Then there will be no hurt. And I say, even if your bone is broken, there will be no pain. There will be no hurt. You fall down and you die. Even then, there will be no pain. If you are just falling back to the Mother Earth, there will be no pain. You are simply absorbed. And who knows? In meditation, just somebody is bumping in you may become your first glimpse of enlightenment. Because it is a shock. A sudden awareness comes to you. Who knows, just falling on the ground and breaking a bone may become your first satori, your first enlightenment. Nobody knows. Life is mysterious. And enlightenment has happened in such different ways. Nobody knows. Do it in love. Feel at home and allow things. Somebody bumps in you, let him bump and let him pass through you. Don't be a wall. Don't come in his way. Allow him to pass. Be porous. Enough for today.